You were like one of the first cinematographers that like I got really challenged about my own process.
Part of it is just like in my personality to like ask why.
Natalie, thank you for...
Are we doing it?
Let's do it. Natalie, thank you for inviting us into your home. It's beautiful. How long have you been in LA now? How many months? Or has it been over a year
now? It's been 2.5 years. We made the plans to move right before the pandemic. Pandemic hit, just went through with it. So we moved here April 2019. Then beginning of 2020, I get a really big job, Blackbird, which just happens to be shooting in New Orleans. Yeah. They had no idea I was from there. So I spent most of 2021 back in New Orleans.
What was it like sort of working with, I know you've worked with talent before, like on a high level, but I feel like Paul and Taryn are like some of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, it was just so inspiring watching their process. I mean, and they have totally different processes, you know. So Paul is very kind of, you know, in, I guess, less formal in a way, but more in the moment. And he'll maybe tweak some things from, bring different things from take to take. And he can kind of like snap out of it. You know, and he would have to, he said, just because it was so dark, he would have to bring some humor in between takes and do a high kick or something and like crack some jokes. And Taryn is very, you know, he was more formally trained. I wouldn't say he's like all the way to like method, but yeah, I guess more formal in his approach and stayed more in character.
You guys are doing single camera, right?
No.
Or was it two camera? Mm-hmm. So, wow, okay.
You know, we wanted to shoot it like a, so it would come off as a single camera show. Okay. So that was always the goal, and to never, you know, compromise lighting by cross covering. Yep. And plus we didn't have a lot of room in the jail because it was a real location. So a lot of times, like in the cell, of course, that was single camera. And if the second camera didn't work, then it didn't work and it would be single camera. But when they're, you know, a lot of the show is like, two people sitting down and a lot of dialogue. And so, yeah, we do, you know, cameras side by side or, you know, one in a profile, one more straight on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't sort of true, like we're doing the master for the next 2 hours and then, or was it sort of really progressive? Like,
yeah, we do the master first. B camera would usually find like kind of a more unconventional off angle, usually a little more compressed version of a wide.
Gotcha.
If it worked, you know, if it didn't, it would stand down and then we'd come in for the coverage with two cameras most of the time.
What was it like working in that jail for so long?
Oh my God. It took a toll on you after a while, you know. It was quite hard because just not having all of the control in the world. Yeah. Do you know that? It's like Orleans, it's OPP, Orleans Parish Prison.
It's and abandoned, then, right?
Yeah, since it closed down after Katrina.
Okay.
And basically just movies shoot in it now, okay. You know, so there's like all the existing lighting in there, the changed out all the bulbs, so they all matched. But just the house, just to like access individual housing was like, it's a jail, so they're all bolted shut. Mm-hmm. So like to, you know, to manipulate an individual fixture required, you know, putting the grips like cut out indies or black or diffusion. So those would be like affixed by a magnet. And so one by one. So that was stuff like that was just time consuming, shooting in the cells, of course, because it was so small and getting cameras in there. We did have like one smallish portal per, like Jimmy and Larry each had one in their respective cells that we could get the camera through for another angle.
Portals like holes in?
Yeah, that our department made. It was like maybe like 6 feet wide by 4 feet tall. It was a big deal. It wasn't just like pop in and out. Like we'd have to like factor that in the schedule of like it coming out, putting the small GF8 arm through dolly, you know, the base in the next door cell, and then we'd, you know, if we'd want to shoot from that wall, that's what we would do.
Yeah.
And then just, yeah, being in a jail for that long, you know.
Yeah.
It was like pretty much the whole second half of the shoot. So like 3 months or something.
Wow. Where did you guys shoot all the exterior stuff?
A lot of practical locations. Yeah, most of the exterior, like the cornfields were sugarcane fields converted to corn. So they planted corn, like acres of corn, like months before we shot. Yeah, it was like a lot of like outskirts of New Orleans that we shot for Illinois. Yeah. And then the stage work, like the mess hall of the jail, that was on a stage. The psych offices, the dentist office.
It's interesting what they would pick for on location versus stage stuff. Like, do you look back and go like, man, I wish we could have just shot everything on location or everything
on
stage?
No, it actually worked out great. We actually had locations lined up for mess hall and the dentist office and the psych office, pretty much everything. And those, just because of schedule, time, money, you know, all this stuff, they ended up being built on a stage. It just made, and we had so much more control, and it actually was great.
What was the interview process for the show?
Yeah, it all happened like really fast. So it got the call, hey, they're interested in you. My agent sent me the scripts, write everything. I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. Yeah. This is right up my alley. I'm never going to get this, but you know, I'll talk to him. It'd be cool to, you know these people. So I interviewed with Mikhail Roskam, the first director, just him alone first. And we hit it off. We talked for like an hour. He's great. So he liked me. He told Dennis and the other producers. And so they set up a meeting with, it was Dennis and three other producers. And that was a pretty intense, intimidating meeting.
Why so?
Just because it's like, you know, like a panel of like these producers and they, you know, and you know, it's something that I really, really wanted and a really big project. And, you know, it just, there was a lot of stake and, you know, they like asked me some kind of tough questions, but I feel like I really nailed the interview. And
what are some of those tough questions though?
They were like, so what did you do in a situation on set? Was it where things weren't going right or something like that? And you had to problem solve. Honestly, I forgot what I said. It was just something, yeah. You know, but I remember it being like, I was happy.
You're like, what am I getting to the ASC right now?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was like drilling, you know, and rightfully so. Like I'd done, you know, just like smaller indie films before this, you know, and commercials. So on paper, it's like, okay, I'm the new gal in the mix. And, sure. You know, I've never done a TV series before. Much less like shoot the whole series myself. It's not like I was alternating with another DP that I could work under, which is also pretty rare. And it was a huge opportunity for me, obviously, to like come in and be able to establish the look of a show and keep it up and it just be my own. So, yeah, it was a nerve wracking, but I felt like I did good. And it was like shortly, it was like, that was on a Friday and it was like less than an hour later, my agent called and they're like, they love you. They're going to Apple and a United Front and saying they, you know, they want to hire you. I'm like, okay. And so by Monday, got the final word and I was like on a plane by Friday.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What does that feel like though?
It was wild. It was, I mean, I was ecstatic. I'm like, oh my God, this is like, you know, a really, you know, like I said, really huge thing for me. And it's something that I really, really want to do. And the material is just, I feel like I felt like really ready to level up. You know, I just had been waiting for something like this. Like before that, I lost out like 4 or 5 different like bigger projects like consecutively. So I was just like so ready to just like take this opportunity and just like prove that I could do it, you know. But it's also scary, you know. But, you know, I was just like tried to block that out. And, you know, just like the fact that I had never done a lot of things before, but like I could figure it out. You know, that's what I've always done. But also the other scary thing was I didn't have much prep at all. I had like 5 weeks total. So, and it being a location heavy show, you know, I got in and just like scouted for weeks and weeks, you know, just to catch up and try to see all these locations. So a lot of the process was like me just telling myself to just like really just trust my instincts. And a lot of that is just like relying on just like what I feel is like right. Just relying on, you know, trusting my past experiences and trusting myself, you know, because I had no other choice.
That's got to be so scary too, having that little time, because to you, it is like, it's a moment for me to show that I'm ready and I can level up.
Yeah.
But I'm under the gun now.
Exactly.
And I have to just.
Exactly.
And it's really like you just said, like I have to trust my instincts and like, have I really put in the work? Like, are my instincts going to pay off?
Yeah.
But I will for sure tell you, like, I mean, dude, as soon as I saw the trailer, I think I texted you. I was just like, dude, what the fuck? I was like, what is this? Like, how did this happen? Because it looks, I mean, it looks incredible. And it's not even like, there's not even a moment where you can see something and it's like, oh, that's a little subpar. It's like every fucking moment is so dialed and like so you. I was like, I was just watching the whole series, just beaming the entire time.
Oh, because
I was just like, that's my friend, Natalie. She's cool.
Thanks. Well, I see stuff, of course, and I guess this is a good thing, and I think all DPs do this, but just like I see, I'm like, oh, God, you know.
Of course.
You know. But it's good. Never, yeah. It's like that's, you know.
That's so sad though that like you can't, and I feel this way about like anything that I make is like I can't enjoy it like
it's hard
else.
Yeah, I just like I see all the flaws, I see where I went wrong, I see where I didn't have enough time. Okay, you know, maybe cut yourself a break, there's only so much time, but I see like, oh, what I could have done. I see how my lighting got better as we were in the jail longer, and I got the rhythm of this location, and I saw what worked and didn't work, and it's little nuanced things.
You were like one of the first cinematographers that like I felt like they work with, and like I got really challenged about my own process, and I think it was because you kind of made me dive deeper than I was probably willing to go at we haven't done like a long form thing yet, which will happen. Mm-hmm. But on the short form stuff that we've done and the commercial stuff, like I feel like I always come away with working with you and with this like sense of like, gosh, man, like I'm not asking why enough, but also like I could have more intention. You know, I think like a lot of your work, I think a lot of people would say this, is that your work has like so much intention behind it.
Yeah, I think it's just part of it is just like in my personality to like ask why. Why am I doing this? Why? What's going on with these characters?
Yeah.
What's going on with this scene? For me to know how to execute the cinematography. Yeah. Just because I just need, you know, a starting point, you know, and it just in a motivation and, you know, kind of similar to how actors work. It's, you know, what's the motivation? What am I trying? What's my goals in this particular moment? And I have a hard time with just doing something for the sake of doing it. You know,
just
the aesthetic. And I mean, sometimes you can do that on certain projects, like maybe commercials or music videos, and where, you know, there isn't like a deeper meaning of everything. It's just style comes first, sure, but you know, for narrative projects, it's like the why, the script, the emotions like have to drive everything.
I remember you sent me like a document. Do you remember this? Like, I'm sure you use this on a lot of stuff, but could you tell me what's in that document?
Yeah, it's just, you know, scene by scene, just asking the questions of, you know, what's going on emotionally with these characters, what's the subtext of the scene, what is the purpose of the scene, what's the function, you know, why does it exist? That's such a huge question. Whose perspective are we in at this given moment, you know, perspective in terms of like emotional perspective, whose scene is it? Stuff like that, you know, really just getting down and dirty with the why, you know, and then letting that inform everything.
That's like really what I remember feeling like going through each scene. I forget which project it was. I think it was probably the Solar Driftwood or something. Yeah. And I was like, I guess this scene doesn't have any subtext. you know, like it really kind of, and then I add some bits to it just from asking myself what, you know, and it's something that I honestly, when I'm writing narrative stuff now, like I almost take that, not physically take that document and put it next to me, but I have like a list of questions that I'm sitting with my script and I'm writing, and I it's not like you're trying to check everything off, but it's just like a reminder.
Exactly.
That like to add something deeper into this moment where it, I think that's something that a lot of, I'm sure you felt this a lot too, or like a lot of things don't necessarily have that specificity to it, but like the really special things like sort of do carry that. Is that something that you felt with Blackbird? Did you connect on it with that, on that level?
Yeah.
At all?
Absolutely. Because it wasn't, you know, wasn't just a plot driven series. It, it was very character driven. Yes, there is the plot, the true, you know, it's based on a true story, but it was, you know, it was about how Jimmy Keane, Taron Egerton's character, sees himself in Larry Hall, Paul Hauser's character, and how that causes him to evolve, and those layers is, you know, what really got me excited.
Yeah.
And what, and that's what Dennis Lehane, our showrunner and writer, was, that was wanting to explore with this story. And he wasn't interested in just going beat by beat with what happened, you know, in real life. It was, okay, let's get to the why of it all, and the complex, uncomfortable stuff where you, you kind of start to feel a little empathy at times for Larry Hall, and you laugh at his jokes, and Jimmy Keane does the same. Yeah. And you know, it's not like you condone any of the rapes and murders and, you know, condone him being a serial killer, but you can see him as another human, you know, and you can see how he got there, and how maybe Jimmy Keane could potentially maybe not get there, but just go on another path that's deep, dark.
Yeah. Like there's a fine line between like serial killer and sort of, it's very like, it was, I think you guys nailed it really hard. Also, like Paul's performance is like, so terrifying.
Yeah, it's wild.
The first wild episode when he has this very, if you haven't seen it, obviously you guys need to see it, but he has this very specific voice that he, this character, I don't know how true to life maybe that was.
Yeah, no, it is.
It is.
Yeah, so he had that. That was inspired by Larry Hall. Yeah.
Have you gotten to talk to Taron or Paul about it at all?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are their thoughts? Yeah.
They're just extremely proud of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Both of them.
Well, Taron was like kind of really instrumental in that whole thing, was he not?
Yeah. Yeah. He was a producer. He was the one, I know Dennis had Taron in mind. And then Taron came on board, and he's the one who suggested Paul.
Cool.
And that's how Paul got in the mix. What a move, man. And I know Ray Liotta was always, like, Dennis wrote that for Ray.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That must have been wild, too. I mean, so sad, but working with, I don't know if it was the last thing he did.
I think he was, no, what, it was the last TV series he did, and I think he was on a film when he had passed away.
And so crazy, because his character in that show is, like, kind of passing away as well.
He is, God. Yeah.
Rest in peace, Ray Liotta.
I know. He was a legend. Yeah. That was pretty surreal getting to work with
him. It's also just like, I imagine you kind of framing up Ray, and you're just like, this looks sick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just kind of brings like a, you ever just shoot people that are just like, they just pop for some reason. Oh, God,
that's how Taron was. I mean, and of course, Ray, but I just remember the first time I saw Taron on camera for the camera test. I'm like,
yeah.
I see, like, I mean,
I see why you're an A tier talent.
I see why you're a star. It's just, there's a transformative effect.
Yes.
That it just, it makes imagery just, it just elevates cinematography in a way.
It makes your job real easy.
Makes me look better.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when, Taron and Paul, like, they, I remember, Taron realized, like, early on, it was like our first day shooting with him. And he, we'd done like maybe like two takes on this kind of like complicated camera move. And he saw like camera needed another one. Like we kind of made eye contact and then he's like, I need another one. And, you know, did that for, you know, because he really cares about the craft. He respects the craft. He understands it's not, you know, it's about all of us coming together and being solid, you know.
It's weird how like they're at some level, like we're all just filmmakers, like the talent.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary talent to be able to be in the moment inside of a character and then also be technically aware and to hit not only hit marks, but just maybe turn a certain way 20 degrees to catch the light in your face and look and step forward slightly. So because the camera has a precise ending mark, you know, all these, I could never do it.
Yeah. Especially remembering dialogue.
Yeah. Remembering dialogue. Yeah.
And then also being aware of where the camera is.
And you're shooting out of order. So where are you in the story? And you know,
it's definitely, yeah. I think they get taken for granted a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially when you're on the come up and you don't have a lot of experience with a lot of actors and stuff. I think mm-hmm. it's a lot of directors may view them a little bit more like pawns, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but it's like that is, if I had to go back 10 years, I would do everything I could to just work with actors more mm-hmm. and like get to like, not just work with them, but like get to know more actors,
yeah,
just in New Orleans or something, you know, like because there's a ton of great talent there, and there's a ton of great talent in like kind of every city. Like there are actors like trying to make it everywhere, but invite them into like your process and like mm-hmm. almost like make stuff with them mm-hmm. with you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you guys still 7 months? And what's like the total runtime? Do you remember? It's 7 episodes.
Six 1-hour episodes.
So 6 hours. Did it feel like three movies when you're making it?
I mean, it didn't. It felt like one very long movie. Yeah, like making a feature on steroids.
Yeah.
But there's this, like at the end of it, on day 95, like I knew it's where I belonged. Because, I mean, it's the hardest thing I've ever done just for, you know, because it's leveling up. It's the longest shoot I've ever done, you know, all these things. And by the end of it, I'm like, you know, as hard as this was, like, I can't wait to do this again.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what I want to be doing. And, as exhausted as I was, you know, I was just like, of course I needed a break, but I was just like ready to do it again.
Yeah.
And like,
isn't that weird how you get this second wind?
It's like, addictive. Cause like that, you know, I love long shoots because I don't know, there's this thing of like, almost like it's just this addiction of like wanting to do better than you did the day mm-hmm. before.
Totally.
Or just like, you know, if something didn't go so well one day, okay, how can I make this better the next day? How can if something did great? Okay. You know, like you just feed off of that,
yeah.
You know, and you learn so much in that period and just doing it day after day after day, you have all, you know, you're just doing reps every day,
yeah.
You know, you're building that muscle and you just feel like it feels so good to be in such a rhythm of shooting.
Yeah. I guess like in general, what's like something that you took away from it, whether it's
so
technical or.
Yeah. It's not that I didn't know this before, but it's really, really reinforced on this. Just how important the right collaborators are and how that can make or break things. Experience is one thing, but the right personality match and sensibilities, you know,
yeah.
I mean, that's everything, you know.
Especially on something that long.
Mm-hmm. Something like, that long. Yeah. People get tired. They get over it.
Yeah.
They bring a different energy. Some people, you know, that was interesting, you know, to observe.
You guys didn't have it wasn't one director, right? It was like three or four?
Three directors, yeah.
Three directors. Mm-hmm. That's got to be interesting, like coming into, like, because you're on the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, a new director comes in with, like, they're trying to maybe, like, sort of stake their claim and, like, this is how we're doing things.
Yeah.
it's got to be kind of a whirlwind to go from like 1 month to the next, and you're like,
yeah,
okay, I got to get used to this again.
Exactly.
Or I just got used to something else.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. And that was a challenge and also a learning experience of like being adaptable that, you know, that quickly within the same project. I mean, DPs are used to that because we work with different directors all the time, but within one project, yeah, that was a first for me of like, okay. And all three of them were very different and very different processes, you know? Yeah. So just like, you know, like being like, you know, open and flexible, but then also like guarding the visual language of the show, which it wasn't, you know, the other two directors that came in after Mikkel and I had set up the show weren't trying to fundamentally change anything.
Sure.
You know, they were just trying to continue the visual language and enhance it in their own ways.
Yeah.
And then just like, just on something this big, you know, there are just so many people, you know, and it's a huge circus.
Yeah.
So like on indie films, you know, you see a magical moment, a sunset across the way of your set, and you can just go run and get it.
Yeah.
And on this, I remember seeing that. I'm like, oh God, I really want to go shoot that. And then I turned around and looked at all the trailers and the tents and the trucks and then I'm like, and the 100+ crew. And I'm like, there's no way that could happen, you know?
Yeah.
And just the sheer number of people you have to communicate and over communicate with. You know, that was also a learning curve.
It kind of makes you miss maybe some of those like Lost Bayou sets where you're like, obviously hard in its own right, you know, like its own challenges and whatever. But do you still have sort of a love for that? Like,
oh God, yeah.
Sub $200,000 movie.
Yeah. I mean, there are positives and negatives to both. Yeah. But like the magical thing about indie films is that creative flexibility and you can change things at the last minute and just do be more in the moment than you could with on this big of a show. But then you're also, you know, limited by budget. And so maybe you don't have enough crew or the tools, but then you learn you're more creative in a way that way because you only have a limited amount of tools.
I totally feel like, I remember I was talking to Sean Porter at one point about our movie that we did in the Virgin Islands. And it was like, I was telling him sort of how nimble we were and how we could kind of, I was like, I'm going to shoot this dialogue scene at sunset, you know, and then I'm also going to shoot this other thing. And he was like, the only way you could do that is if you had $30 million or if you had $30,000.
Yeah. One extreme or the other.
In between.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that's like so much of how that movie was made too, was like, we would just see something and just go. Like, I remember even just like Dave Davis was just like shaving in the bathroom or something. And I was like, Dave, can you come do that on the deck?
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
And he would just like, okay. Like, and JP's ready and he could just shoot it real quick. Yeah. And we have this location in the mountains and like the ocean. And you're like, oh, it looks like we planned that shit.
Yeah. And you could just play, you know, but those sensibilities like came in handy too of like sometimes not making things bigger just because I had all the tools, you know what
so
I mean?
Interesting. Yeah.
Of like maybe just a little bit of negative fill and some natural light. Cause the scene is very short. I could pull that off and then spend longer, spend a more amount of time on this.
Yeah. That's gotta be such a mind too, because you're like,
It's
you have literally everything. A light and some negative, and I have 100 people with me.
Yeah.
And you're like, should I be doing more? You know?
Right. Yeah. You have that voice coming, you know, but like solitary confinement, I lit that with a tweenie.
Yeah.
But that's all it, and some negative fill and a bounce, you know, but that's all we needed.
Was there moments where you had to kind of walk yourself down from doing too much though?
Yeah. When I realized, okay, I just... less is more here. I don't need as much as I thought. Or maybe it'd be set up, but I could turn things off. One big thing that I was very new for me and very liberating and amazing was having a rigging team.
Mm.
You know, just having a rigging gaffer, a rigging key grip who did everything beforehand based on the plan. And then we show up to set and it's like 90% there and then it's just tweaking.
So they were like working ahead of you guys?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and whatever kind of, you know, putting all the units, whether it's a practical location or on a stage, you know, lining up the windows with Arri Maxes or any kind of, you know, if there's softbox, you know, doing all of the lighting basically. So it's all in place, everything we talked about, you know, so it's nice. So the first thing when I get to set, and I like to get there at least 30 minutes early, is just like come in, the riggers are there. I'm like, okay, can you turn everything on and just sit in this space, and I can prepare myself mentally for what maybe needs to be done.
One of your extreme, like, I mean, you're so talented at making, you can make that stuff look just as good as the stuff that is really low budget. Like I look at both your images, and obviously there's differences in like scale. Yeah. I think that's probably like one of the bigger differences that you get with more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder if there's like some advice that you have for younger sort of filmmakers or cinematographers, of how to sort of approach smaller budget stuff in order to also achieve something really elevated like you're able to achieve.
I mean, locations are so huge. So just that's like step one, find a great location that almost lights itself where you don't have to do much, or you're just modifying, you know, or keeping consistent if you can, or shooting it at the right time of day.
Yeah.
Or you're just diffusing the windows or adding some negative fill. You know, that's huge. You know, obviously production design goes a long way. It doesn't have to be over the top. It can be very minimal and still transform a space, you know?
It's such a good point to like, I mean, places and faces is like, it's half the battle, you know?
Yeah.
Like good talent in a good space is like, you don't have to do that much.
You really don't. You can do a lot with a little. You know, like Lost Bayou, we didn't have much at all. Shapeless, we didn't have much at all.
Yeah.
You know, those were both under $1 million projects. And yeah, it was about finding the right location, shooting them at the right time of day, you know, making maybe, you know, night exteriors, blue hour if you can. We did that a lot on Lost Bayou, you know.
What was the hardest thing about balancing you and Brian's relationship during that movie? Oh. Maybe we should get him in on this.
Hey, Brian.
Brian.
Yeah. We had just gotten married.
I remember that. It was like real recent.
A few months before.
Come sit right here. Okay, so for people who don't know, this is Brian Richard, Natalie's husband. We were talking about what was sort of the hardest thing to balance with y'all's relationship during Lost Bayou, being freshly married and whatnot. I'll give it to
you. I guess it was the, there wasn't much, I don't think the balancing was the hardest part. It was like, actually, like we've always had a very good line of communication, me and her. And so that was kind of like, there was more kind of pros than negatives with it. I guess the only thing that's kind of like the challenge is this, you know, there's like a relationship balance of like that you have at home that is not the same as kind of like on set. And, you know, you have to learn how to put that to the side and be creative partners. But, you know, the pros of it is just that we were like, you know, talking about shots all night long up until like in bed, you know, you know, like talking about it the night before and just like kind of being ready. And we get up together, still talking about the shot, talking about the day, riding to the set together, still talking about a shot, still talking about the day. And then you're just so prepared at that point. We're just in so much sync that.
Oh my God. I mean, even from, sorry, I keep looking at that camera. You spike in the lens. I mean, so if you go back to before Lost Bayou, when we would do shorts and music videos together, I mean, we were very young in our careers, you know, and then it's like we're in a relationship and he's my boss technically. So there's that dynamic, and there's a lot of just like tension also and growing pains and shit we had to just figure out. And like that was like, what, you know, we had to, there's therapy involved, and you know, you just figure out how to balance it and what works and where to like, okay, we're at work and this is not about being, at the time, boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever.
Right. It's more about exploring more than kind of trying to just get what you want.
Right. Right.
Which is, I think, felt like maturing and being an artist. It's like, you know, I think early you have an idea of like going into a project with like, this is exactly how I see it and how I want it. Mm-hmm. And you feel like that's the way to do it. And then
used to like have like,
oh yeah, I had like animatics and storyboards and lens and everything. And I was always so unhappy with the product. I hated everything that came out from it because it wasn't anything, it wasn't even close to what you would expect until I started kind of letting go more and trusting my collaborators and being more of an explorer than kind of a dictator. That's when I started like loving my projects and like having fun with actually creating and being happy with the end products. And I feel like they're better too.
And I feel like I'm at a better place. And it's like, I keep, you know, just because I've worked with so many more directors since the beginning of our collaborative relationship, that I'm able to support you better.
It's funny how it works. It's like, when we did that, we were both rookies, and like now it's like years. You know, it takes so long to get another film off as a director. It's like when this next film gets made, like I'm still going to be technically kind of a rookie, and she's like a seasoned vet.
I'm not a seasoned vet. No, I'm still a rookie.
You get to shoot so much.
We get to shoot so much. Yeah, we get to be on set so much, and directors, you have this downtime of writing or, you know.
You don't really get to practice. To practice is very expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why, like I was saying, like being on Blackbird for so long, just getting those reps in, like day after day after day after day for 95 days, like that's so much practice that like, you know, someone starting out their career as a director, you know, it's just like, I'm sure every time you get on set, you're just like, you know, hold that so tight.
Me and Orion were actually talking about probably a good analogy of this is like kind of like surfing. Mm. Like, there's people out there who have priority over the sort of rookies, you know what I mean? And it's not the most welcoming sort of environment. Like he was saying, like it felt like a lot like filmmaking in a lot of ways where you're like, there's only a certain amount of projects that you can make, you know? And like there's limited resources in order to like learn how to do something, you know? Mm-hmm. So like the amount of time it takes you to learn how to surf is just so, it's grueling, you know, because it's so limited access, which is why, like, when you see, like, the greats, it's like, gosh, man, are they just savants, you know? Like, probably in some way.
Yeah.
Is there something that you guys would tell to maybe sort of, like, this isn't supposed to be, like, Dr. Phil or anything, but, like, people who are like, I even think of like Nick and Sam and stuff like who are in these creative, but also, you know, long-term sort of romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. Like what is something that you, you feel like people need to have as like just a standard of like how you guys kind of coexist, you know?
Communication is everything in your romantic relationship and creative relationship.
Yeah, whenever you're communicating. If you work with when you work with a DP who doesn't communicate well or other people, it sucks. The more communication, I just constantly work on my communication when I do get a chance to work. Mm-hmm. But then that's the kind of how we run our home lives too. We were constantly communicating about things.
Don't take things personally, like on set. You know, if like he loses his patience on me or at home, but like especially on set, you know, like that it's not the same dynamic as you are at home, so you can't, you know, get offended. But for some people it doesn't work. It either works or it doesn't, and some couples just cannot work together.
Being married is hard enough, but like I think it just takes like a real level of like dedication to like also make it work on a creative level. So I applaud you guys you guys are always, I hope you know that like people back in New Orleans like really miss you guys. And like we talk about you guys all the time. I think you guys left like a super big impact in that scene, you know, that's like still there.
And like Alejandro Iñárritu, you know, calls my cell phone randomly one day and is like, hey, I want to execute and produce your first feature. Give me your script. Like,
yeah.
I'm going on with these first meetings. I have an agent. I'm like, people are asking, like, where's the script? Where's the mastery, you know? And then privately, I was like, oh, shit, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that.